Welcome back, folks. You will recall Hurricane Helene in September as it moved up through the Florida Panhandle, through Florida into North Carolina. In so doing, it destroyed or damaged Baxter International's manufacturing facility there in Marion, North Carolina. That manufacturer was responsible for about 60% of the IV fluids used by American hospitals, equivalent to about 1.5 million bags daily. 1.5 million bags, I'm sorry. The problem was so severe that the Biden administration invoked the wartime powers of the Defense Production Act to speed the rebuilding of this factory of intravenous fluids back in mid-October. Recently, the Food and Drug Administration Commissioner Robert Califf says it turns out a huge part of his day is taken up on very basic supply chain issues across every commodity that they regulate. And Friday, they announced that three more IV fluids were in shortage, and it looked like that this shortage was going to continue to be a problem until around March of 2025 is what the expectations were, depending on what ultimately happens. And the importance of IV fluid use in medicine, I don't know if you can overstate it, and that's why we wanted to check that out with Dr. Peter W., Assistant Dean for Advanced Learning and Simulation at LSU Health New Orleans School of Medicine. Doc, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Newell. Happy to join you guys.
Happy New Year to you and your family. Haven't seen y'all in a while, but I hope things are going well, and thank you for joining us today. How serious is this issue?
This is a huge issue. It was big in October. People stockpiled their fluids and then began conservation measures in each hospital and each facility, understanding that this was going to be a 6 month to a 1 year shortage.
And as we continue to move forward, there is talk, and I've read several articles about because of the expectation is that there's going to continue to be supply chain issues, that internal protocols within hospitals and the utilization of IV fluids might be subject to change. Is that true?
Well, it's absolutely true. But those the use of IV fluids since October has changed dramatically across the entire country. And so people think it's just
Can you give us some examples?
Sure. Gladly. People think that it's just an IV, like you're dehydrated and here's your fluid. But IV fluids are used to mix medications and administer medications in all healthcare arenas. So not just hospitals, but also in clinics as well as surgery centers. IV fluids are also used in formulating medicines within pharmacies that are infused, as well as in the operating room itself, where those IV fluids are given intravenously, but also used to irrigate areas as well. So the utilization of those IV fluids in the ORs would probably be the lion's share of the vast quantity amount that's used, which is hard to imagine, but people don't think of it in that manner. So it created, because of those supply chain shortages, it created workarounds and rationing of fluids. So instead of using a liter bag, you might use a 250cc bag. Instead of using an IV, you might encourage your patient, if they could, to drink fluids, which is vastly superior to receiving them IV.
So would one of the examples of treatment outside of the hospital where IV fluids would be used, if my memory serves me correct, it's utilized in like dialysis, right? And other things similar.
So fluids are used in dialysis. That's not going to change. That's life-sustaining care, right? When we're having a machine function as your kidney, we don't waste fluid there and we don't conserve fluid there. There's little room there. But in the amount of fluid and the types of fluid we use within the operating room space, whether we're talking about bladder irrigation, whether we're talking about peritoneal irrigation or thoracic irrigation, large quantities. We're talking, you know, 30, 40, 50 liters in one procedure. That's been changed. That's been altered.
What is your sense, if you read kind of between the lines with what the FDA Commissioner Robert Califf was saying, it seems as though there's a whole lot in the medical supply sphere that they're having to manage from a supply chain issue, not only just IV fluids. Has that been y'all's experience?
So again, I want you to think of it not just the bag that's hanging that's going into the vein, but that those fluids go to formulations of medications that have an impact across the entire healthcare sphere.
So when we think that
those fluids,
so when we think that there's one facility in one location that's responsible for producing about 60% of an IV fluid, I guess one would tend to wonder and scratch their head as to why we would allow something like that to happen if we want to control our own destiny here in the U.S., because I understand that the FDA has now approved the importation of IV fluids from other countries.
Well, but it's compounded, Newell, because I want to say a year ago, there was the similar scenario. It wasn't a hurricane. It was a natural disaster in Australia that led to a rationing of IV fluids in that country, which led to the European market providing IV fluids for that country in addition to the needs of their own. So when this happened in the U.S., you're really compounding the shortage internationally by the U.S. shortage.
Peter, I mean, you've practiced medicine a long time. You were in the emergency room a lot. I mean, I guess for doctors, you have to wonder the governance of this. Why wouldn't there be a heightened interest at the federal government level to make sure that we manage and massage our supply chain a lot more closely and in order to make sure that we don't have these anomalies that appear? I mean, the practice of medicine is hard enough. When they start asking you to ration medical supplies, I mean, how many more balls can you juggle?
Yeah, it makes it tough. But, you know, in working with our colleagues in pharmacy and working with our colleagues in nursing and working with our colleagues who operate the operating rooms and the surgery centers, you know, we rely on this interdisciplinary teamwork to address these kind of things, because this won't be the last supply chain shortage of a fluid or a needed medication, and we really do juggle those things on a daily basis. There are lots of medication shortages all the time. We live in a world that has a short supply of blood, and we deal with blood shortages all the time, not just trauma centers, but in communities. And so that kind of staying more on top of it and communicating better across disciplines and then up to governing bodies is essential. And that's not going to change. If anything, that'll be more refined moving forward.
You know, one of the reasons I wanted to talk about this in one of the articles that I was reading, I think it was an orthopedic surgery center, they found themselves in a position where they had to cancel elective surgeries. And it was kind of like, wow, I mean, this is more severe than I ever thought.
Yeah. And again, when you talk about the utility of fluids, and then when we're doing joint therapy, surgical therapy, right, like a knee replacement, a shoulder replacement, you know, dozens of liters, you know, 20, 30, 40 liters of fluid can be used in a single operation for that. And so, you know, if you don't have it, you don't have it. And, you know, you have to be able to irrigate that space in order to reduce infection and to promote healing.
It's interesting, the fragility of this, of the whole system, right? I mean, as someone from the outside looking in, when I read the first article, I was like, wow, wait, what? you don't expect to hear that, right?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, Baxter built their plant in that area of Carolina with the assumption that this was a safe place. You know, this is once in a 100-year storm that hit them and wiped out both bridges leading to the plant. You know, I have friends that work for that company. You know, they've tried to help us to the degree they can't. And they want to get
interestingly,
back on board as soon as possible.
Interestingly, they're back online partially, but they can't get the product out of the manufacturing plant because, as you just pointed out, the two bridges haven't been restored. Last I heard, they may have been by now, but I was like, when you see the series of circumstances, it almost gets crazy. It's like reading a novel, like, you know, a fictional novel, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, can this get any crazier?
This couldn't happen here, right? But I mean,
right? Yeah.
You know, Newell, you and your readers lived through Katrina. Right.
Right.
And so you saw firsthand what supply chain looked like and what, you know, lapses in federal government oversight looks like, or dysfunction, even of FEMA, what that looks like. You know, so it's tough. And so it means that having a robust team, boots on the ground for your institution, for your healthcare community, just how critically important that is. And, you know, LCMC and UMC have done a phenomenal job. And I would say that Ochsner has done the same. And it's a benefit to our community, right? Benefit to our community that they pivot quickly, that they look for opportunities, and they partner in a smart manner.
And that's the key. Those two healthcare systems have collaborated together on many occasions in the best interest of the community. And that's something that we should brag about.
Yeah, no, agreed, 100%. And, you know, we champion each other with the recent, you know, awful events on Bourbon Street New Year's Eve. Ochsner was incredibly supportive to UMC and the trauma center. And so that's the world where we need to live in, where we mutually support each other.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining us and backfilling the importance of this. And hopefully we can get this ship righted sooner rather than later. Because as you said, it's going to happen again. And who knows what looms on the horizon. Right.
Right. But you know, it's interesting. We're moving. We anticipate that within the next 2 to 3 months, this will be straight and we'll be able to get Baxter up, functioning, running, and delivering the needed supplies on time. And then, you know, go back to business as usual.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Dr. Peter W., Assistant Dean for Advanced Learning and Simulation at LSU Health New Orleans School of Medicine. We truly appreciate your time and your insight, and Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year, Newell. Bye.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Tax Line. We'll go to the talk lines when we return, so give us a shout. We'll be right back. Stay with us.